Good morning, everyone. The share today is in memory of Lezecher Nishmat Bracha Tal on her first Yahrzeit, sponsored by the Halfinger and Fuchs family. We hope that all of the Divrei Torah should be Le'iloi Nishmata, and so we appreciate the sponsorship. Also, in terms of this past week, obviously we know that we lost today, not today, this week, one of the great, great Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Avi Yosef, and probably many of you were at the Levaya. You know, 10% of the country was at the Levaya, really a phenomenal thing. And although many of us perhaps think of him more as associated with Sfardim, but it's important to understand that he really was a true, true Gadol B'Yisrael for really all parts of Am Yisrael. Although, again, I'm not endorsing politics and Shas and anything to do with that. That's a separate issue. But besides his tremendously encyclopedic grasp of every part of Torah, just totally phenomenal, I once had the zechus to be in his apartment, Motzei Shabbos for Havdalah, along with 100 other people. You know, just came. I happened to be in Harnov, and I noticed he had a very large library. I always look at people's svarim and see what would Rav Avi have, and like 20,000 svarim were there. But then I realized, like, he knew all 20,000. He didn't even need a library. You know, he basically knew everything, and it was just amazing, totally amazing. In fact, when Bar Ilan developed their search engine for responsa literature, in other words, in which you can type in a question and you can back all the references to the Shelos or Tshuvos, one of the ways they tested the system was by submitting an inquiry to Rav Avadja and then running it through the computer. And he got 10 references, the computer got 9. And they boasted, they said, you see how great our system is? We get 9 out of the 10 that Rav Avadja got, meaning he beat the computer in terms of references and the like. So all of us know, all of us have heard about his phenomenal genius, but it's also important to know that in spite of the fact that he was a very outspoken person, and sometimes he spoke in hyperbole and exaggeration, and it's very, very true, but he truly, truly had a tremendous Avas Yisrael. He truly was a father. And really, the reason why there were so many there is that he was not an aloof person at all. He was approachable. He had a sense of humor. He had many, many stories. And he deeply, deeply cared about people. He cared about people on an individual basis. He cared about people on a collective basis. And as I say, his manner of speaking, first of all, he had a very soft, sweet voice, by the way. Sometimes you read in the paper about something, some outrageous thing he said, Motzei Shabbos, and you think of him as somebody who'd be, you know, screaming and everything else. Not at all. He spoke in a very sweet, kind way, and sometimes he would say things to make a joke, but, you know, the press takes it and exaggerates it in a very, very wild way. So I just want to tell you just two very short stories to illustrate that side of him, which sometimes people didn't know, and the press didn't always report either. When he had his first heart attack a number of years ago, so he was rushed to the hospital, and the physicians determined he needed emergency bypass surgery, and it had to be done now. He refused. He says he has to be taken to his home for 3 hours. He says he cannot go to the hospital till 3 hours go by. His children didn't understand what was going on. They said, Abba, well, what's going on? It's bikuach nefesh. Whatever you need, we'll bring you. Why do you have to go home for 3 hours? He says, no. Nope. He says, I will not consent to anything until I'm taken home for 3 hours. It turned out he was in the middle of writing a tshuva to permit an aguna to remarry, a woman whose husband disappeared. And, of course, in the Yom Kippur War, by the way, he was responsible for martyring hundreds of agunot. But this was one particular aguna. And he was in the middle of the tshuva, and he was afraid. He says, if I go to the hospital, if I have surgery, who knows if I will survive? I must finish the tshuva to permit her to remarry. Only then can I go into the hospital, even for life-saving surgery. He went home, he finished the tshuva, then he went in for emergency, so-called emergency bypass surgery. This was his sense of Avas Yisrael, of compassion for a single woman, a woman by herself, in other words, in which he really was willing to risk his life in order to give her a hatsola. Another story, although I don't know all the background, I just saw this reported, was that one time he was with somebody And all of a sudden, around 85 people show up, singing and dancing and bringing cake and flowers. And this person didn't understand what this was. And Rav Adjei explained that these were the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of a French woman, an elderly woman who came to Eretz Yisrael after World War II. And she thought her husband had died in the concentration camps. She remarried and over these years produced many, many B'nai Torah, sons and daughters and grandchildren who were learned and from. And then all of a sudden there was some indicator that her first husband was alive, which would have made all of these children mamzerim. And somehow Rav Avadja matured. Now the article didn't tell you how, and I don't know how, and I'm very curious how. But Rav Avadja matured, and these 85 people, her descendants, came to thank him for giving them a basis. So after they all left, a little bit of a party, just a spontaneous party, he went over to the rabbi that he was talking to, and he said, "Touch my hand." And he touched his hand, and he felt tears. And he says, "These were the tears. I don't know if you noticed, as they were talking to me, tears were being shed." And Rav Avadja, who knew Tanakh by heart as well as Shas, which itself is an unusual accomplishment a little bit, quoted a pasuk in Koheles that talks about the Dimat HaShukim, which means the tears of the oppressed that have no comfort. And the Medrash says the tears of the oppressed are the Mamzerim, who are paskin to be Mamzerim because of a beis din, and no one can comfort them and no one can help them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I will give them comfort in one way or the other." Rav Adjei said, "I try to be Hashem Shaliach in bringing comfort to the Demat HaShukim, the tears of the oppressed." And he says, and that is the role. That is the role of a posek, of a gadol, to be within Allah. And because Rav Avadja was not a reformer in any way, obviously, it was precisely because of his total command of everything in halacha that he was able to see every possibility to help people when he was able to help people. And he was Moser Nefesh to do that. So as I say, you know, the Motzei Shabbos Shiurim, and again, if you listen to YouTube, you can see some of them. You can see they are not at all as reported in the press. I mean, they're humorous, they're gentle. And someone pointed out, too, that, you know, for 65 years, until the past decade or so, he was giving the shiurim in the Bukharim, and his audience were not always learned Talmidei Chachamim. His audience were sometimes very, very simple people, people who did not have an advanced Torah education. And this person gave me a mashal. How many times did he explain how you make tea on Shabbat? Meaning he took like simple things, you know, you put in the water first and this and that. In other words, all of the very, very basic things that you would think a gadol would not necessarily be so involved in, he was involved in. He took the time and he had a pleasure in explaining basic halacha to people who had Yiras Shemayim, who wanted to keep halacha, even though they were not learned. So, as I say, he was a very, very extraordinary person and just an amazing person, not just for his mind, but for his heart and for his soul. And it really is a tremendous loss to Am Yisrael. There is really no one that was like him, and no one that can replace him in that way. You know, we have Gaonim, we have Eloyim, and Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always give Am Yisrael Gedolim. But this was a very, very unique combination that perhaps... I won't say we Ashkenazim, there might be Svartim here, but at least, you know, Ashkenazim cannot always appreciate. In fact, if I could afford myself a stereotype, Bichlal, there is a concept that Svartic Gedolim often relate better to the average person. Ashkenazic Gedolim, you know, Rosh Hashivas, etc., even though they're Balei Midos and Tzadikim, but they tend to be, you know, they tend to connect more with the learned and the like, you know, the average man in the streets or woman in the street cannot always connect to the great, great Gedolim. Among Svardim, there's a little bit of an exception that indeed they were more accessible to the Hamon Am, and Rav Avadja in particular was very, very accessible until health issues and the like. So it's something that Klal Yisrael should mourn. And again, we just hope that he, together with so many of the great, great Gedolim that we've lost in recent years, should be a Melech Yosher in Shemayim for Am Yisrael. We are in a very, very difficult matzav, both geopolitically and religiously, spiritually as well. And of course, the two are connected; they're not disassociated in many ways. And we hope that, hopefully, min hashamayim, the gedolim can bring rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world that we are in. But as I say, you know, people ask me, you know, at Levi itself, you know, yeah, from students, more Sameach, whatever it is, like, what do we learn from the fact that Hashem takes a gadol? Now, in some ways, it's kind of an irritating question, because, you know, when someone dies, you know, at a young age, as unfortunately that very week, there was a very, very chashuv ben Torah, Reb Gershon Bird, who was nifter in a drowning accident. So one can wonder, you know, what is Hashem telling me when he takes a young person? When Baruch Hashem, a person lives a long, long life, you know, it's not like, you know, I mean, what if somebody would have lived to 150 and died? What's Hashem telling us when he takes a man? You know, people have to die. You know, that's the way it is. So in some ways, to start saying there's some lesson when very, very old, you know, gedolim are taken, is, you know, in a way, it's kind of an irritating question, because, you know, it's a kapara, yeah, of course. But one message is, of course, that when there's a void that's created in the world, when there's a void, when there's an emptiness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, each and every one of us have to do something to fill the emptiness that exists in the world. Now, not one of us, or even a million of us, can fill the whole thing that Rav Avadya gave to the world. But everybody can do something, and if enough Yidden try, we could try to be memalei the chalo, and that would be in Torah learning, in mitzvahs, in avas Yisrael, and in caring about klal Yisrael, and in caring about individual Jews. So in many ways, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, don't be over-dependent on gedolim. Don't let them be your surrogates. Don't let them be your tzaddikim that do all good things. Rather, we have to take the achrayas in our own life. And that's really always going to be the message when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the gedolim from us. So on one hand, it's a kapara, but also it's a stimulus. And in fact, many say, it's interesting, many connect it, many say, some people have a problem. How can Mises Tzaddikim be a kapara? Isn't that vicarious atonement? And isn't that what that other religion teaches? That one person can die for another person's sins? Now, one answer is, well, maybe they got it from Yiddishkeit, you know, again, Mises Tzaddikim. But many, many Meforshim actually say that the reason why Mises Tzaddikim is a kapara is not because the death of the tzaddik intrinsically is a kapara, but the death of the tzaddik inspires me to do tshuva, to become a better person, to be mamale, to fill the chalal, to fill the emptiness. And therefore the kapara is because the misa of the tzaddik has changed us in some way. And when the taka doesn't change us, then indeed. In fact, there's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Hatzadik avad, v'yein ish sam alev, the tzaddik has perished, and nobody cares. So the simple meaning is, these are two statements. The tzaddik perishes, and nobody cares. The Alshech HaKadosh says a beautiful pshat. Hatzaddik avad. When does a tzaddik truly perish? When nobody cares to follow his ways. But if we try to follow his ways, then the tzaddik has not perished. The tzaddik is still alive in the world, because we have tried to follow his ways in some way. See, that's the Alshech's Pshat. The tzaddik is destroyed when we ignore what he lived for. But when we follow in his ways, then the tzaddik continues to live and is mashpia in this world. So, he's Zichrei Baruch, and again, it's just something to be aware of, how an extraordinary great person that he was. Again, I'm... Of course, you all know the very cute story, although it's been embellished, unfortunately. The story as it actually happened is not as super dramatic, as they say. But, you know, when he was 14, his father took him out of yeshiva because he had a makolets and he needed him to work in the grocery store. And when he wasn't in yeshiva, so the Rosh Yeshiva Parat Yosef, Rav Ezra Tia, who's a very, very great gadol, comes to the store and says, what's going on? And the father says, well, Lovadia has to work in the makolet because I can't afford it. His brothers are in the arms, so military, in the etzel, in whatever it would be. So The story as it's told is Rav Ezra Atiyah, the Rosh Hashiva, was in his 60s or 70s at the time, said, give me an apron, I will work in the store. And send your son to yeshiva. You need a worker, I'm here. Now, that's an amazing story. That a great, the story is not quite as dramatic. The story is he sent one of his younger men to do it. Okay, it's not as dramatic as the Rosh Hashiva actually working. But this is how they tell the story. So again, I know this is Shelo Ke'inyan a little bit, but I did want to say something because it is something that needs to be mentioned. And as I say, the Israeli press, which this is one of its many sins, often portrayed him in an absolutely opposite way than he truly was. He was not a person of hate or spite. It was exactly the opposite. He was a person of great Avas Yisrael, but he had a certain speaking style. Actually, it's quite funny which was just humorous and sometimes a little shtachy, so to speak. But it was always meant in he was making serious points, but it was always meant not in a malicious way. It was just meant to bring out certain points. So if you didn't appreciate the humor, you would take it such a serious, like a fire and brimstone thing, and that is mamish, not the way that he presented himself. Okay. I wanted to mention a few things. We have Lech Lecha and Vayera are the primary stories of Avraham Avinu. And there's one very interesting thing. Actually, Avram Avinu, called Avram, is already mentioned at the end of Parshas Noach, that he and his father Terach and Lot, they go to Canaan. That's even before Hashem gave them a command. And then, when Avram is 75 and Terach already died, although Rashi says Terach is still alive, but the Torah records Terach already died, Hashem appears to Avram and says, Lech Lecha, leave your land and go to the land that I will show you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses Avram, and he says, those who bless you will be blessed, those who curse you will be cursed, and you will be a source of blessing to all the nations of the world. Bechiras Avram. And the Bechiras Avram is repeated over and over again in the Brit Ben Absarim, the covenant of the parts, and then in the circumcision. Now, we know from the Torah Shebaal Peh all sorts of reasons why Hashem chose Avram. Avram Avinu, we are told, recognized God at the age of 3. According to another opinion, he was a little older at 40. Already in Haran, in Mesopotamia, Avram and Sarah were makariv people to the belief in Hashem. Avram's chesed, Avram's kindness. Right? We have a whole backstory. And of course, Avram's willingness to be thrown into a fiery furnace and die al kiddush Hashem. And then Hashem made a miracle. Haran waited to see what would happen, and he didn't merit a miracle. So Torah Shebaal Peh gives us the backstory. But what's interesting is, if you just ask yourself, when I read the Chumash alone, without any preconceptions, why does Hashem come to Avraham Avinu when he's 75 years old and says, you're my man? There is absolutely no reason whatsoever that is given. It seems to be a lightning bolt out of the blue. You're the one I choose and you're the one I love. The Maharal raises the question, given the fact that Hashem had many reasons to choose Avraham, and we know this, again, we believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, why does the Torah give you the impression that the choice of Avram was not connected to any rational reasoning? And he says a very powerful idea. He says, yes, of course Hashem chose Avram because of his holiness, because of his goodness, because of his mesiras nefesh, his willingness to die. But if the Torah would have said, I choose you because you're a tzaddik, that would have implied that the choice was conditional. And that if at any point in our history we become Rishayim, we sin, which of course we've done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can abrogate his covenants and switch us and go to a new nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to communicate the idea that his choice of Am Yisrael is eternal, is unconditional, what you call unconditional love. Ava She'eino Teluya B'Davar. Now, unconditional love, even in parenting, does not mean whatever your kid does is okay. the other way around. Obviously, Hashem is not telling us, oh, whatever you do is fine. Obviously, we have galus, we have korban, we have responsibility. And indeed, unconditional love, even as a parent, means you try to raise your child with guidance. But it does mean that even when God punishes us, even when there's hester panim, even when there's times of anger and times of din, they are coming in the nature of love. They are coming in the nature of guidance. They are coming in the nature of discipline. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's onshim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's concealment is not in the nature of hate or rejection. It is in the nature, as the Torah itself says, Kasher yiyaser ish espino, as a father might chastise a child, so too Hashem chastises us. Hashem punishes us, but it is punishment that comes from love and not punishment that comes from hatred and rejection. And the Maral says that is built into the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives no reason for the Bechira of Avraham Avinu, as if to say Hashem's choice of the Jewish people, which is the Zera Avraham, is unconditional. It cannot be abrogated. Of course, keep in mind that the whole argument of classical Christianity, although they try to get around it in some circles they don't get around it, they still say it, is that indeed the Jewish people, that's what's why it's called, the Christian Bible is called the New Testament, that God, Hashem, has abrogated his covenant. And if you look in the books of the Nevi'im, although the Maral sees this already in the Chumash, but if you look, the Nevi'im themselves often address this. Amos in particular addresses this issue. Will Hashem ever abrogate his covenant? Will Hashem divorce us? Can there be a divorce, so to speak? Because after all, we have committed adultery. Now if you remember, let me just point out Hosea, another beautiful example. Hosea, one of the Treyashim, the beginning of Hosea, there's a very perplexing story. Hosea is commanded to marry a known prostitute. Again, forgive my indelicacy. Gomer. And, as a Navi who is commanded by Hashem, he marries Gomer. He marries this woman. She continues to commit adultery. Now it's adultery. Now it's not adultery, etc. And even though, according to Halacha, if a woman commits adultery, she's not allowed to stay married to the husband, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Hosea, what are you going to do? And Hosea said, I love her. I can't separate myself from her. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now you know my problem. It's possible. Because the Gemara explains, Hosea made this argument as a Navi. Why do we keep on going back to these people again and again and again? Do tshuva, do tshuva, do tshuva. They're unfaithful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should follow the Torah. A woman commits adultery with her husband, she's out. Hosea actually said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hachlifein bi'uma acheres. What's the point? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Hosea to understand what it's like to be deeply in love with someone who, in spite of all the bad that they do, you care about them so much that you can't drop them. And he wanted Hosea to understand in his tragedy of his own life, kaviyachol, kaviyachol, what the Ribono Shel Olam's feelings are. Now again, granted, there is a machlokus among the Mefarshim. If Hosea actually did this, or it was a long dream. Now, again, there are some Mefarshim who say the whole thing was a dream sequence. Okay, that's fine. But whether it's a dream or whether it actually happens, this is what unconditional love means. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu indeed gives us onshim, but it's never a rejection. It's never a divorce. Hashem doesn't divorce us. In fact, it's a little complicated. They have a whole bunch of pilpul. There's a Gemara that says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a Kohen, whatever that means. If he were to divorce us, he couldn't take us back, as a Kohen cannot marry a divorced woman. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu can never give us a get. so to speak. Again, what that imagery means, obviously it's metaphorical, but that's kind of the meaning. So this is the morale. So this is a very, very powerful idea of the unconditional choosing of Israel. And that is why there's no backstory. Which means, by the way, as an interesting parshanut point, the morale is teaching us a very important idea. And this is something that you can apply on your own in many, many areas. And that is the following. All of us know there's Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. And all of us know that the only way we can understand Torah Shebichsav is through Torah Shebalpeh. But the Maral is suggesting a new avenue of inquiry. And that is, when certain things are Balpeh and not Bichsav, ask yourself the question, why are they only Balpeh and not Bichsav? In other words, the morale is suggesting that there is a spiritual lesson to be derived from the fact that certain things are not in the Ksav, even though we know that they're still Balpeh. You see, in other words, it's not just, you don't just bring in the Torah Shebalpeh and stick it into the Pasuk. You ask yourself, okay, if indeed this is the case, why doesn't the Torah record it? And there is a reason. This teaches us, in this case at least, the unconditional aspect of Bechiras Yisrael. Okay, and again, that's an important idea. And that's important as an individual as well. Hashem never rejects any Jew. No matter how far away we are, again, there can be punishment, midas adin, but that is not rejection. That is chastisement, which is a totally different process. By the way, two little chronological points, and again, this is relevant really to all of Avram's life. And that is, first of all, if we were to ask a very simple question, where was Avram Avinu born? That is not as easy a question as you might assume. At the end of Parshas Noach, Avram and Terach start off from a place called Ur Kastim, which is the southern tip of the Fertile Crescent, deep in Iraq. They leave to go to Canaan, going north, northwest, and they stop off at a place called Haran, which is the top of the crescent, between the Tigris and the Euphrates River. Terach dies in Haran. That is when Avram and Sarah begin their outreach work. Es HaNefesh, right? Sarah brought the women to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram brought the men to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then from Haran, Avram gets the Lech Lecha to go to Canaan. And according to Torah Shebalpeh, the reason why he left Ur Kastim is after the incident of thrown into the furnace, and there was not a good place to live after that point. So the simple meaning of the Pasuk's narrative is, Avram comes from a place called Ur Kastim, and Haran was simply the way station on the way to Canaan. And yet, we have at least two textual proofs in the Torah that Avram was born in Haran. First, in Lech Lecha itself, where Hashem speaks to him at the age of 75, Lech Lecha me'artzecha, leave your land. All right, so your land is not such a difficulty, because once they were living in Haran, maybe that's called your land. But it says, u'mimoladetecha, the place of your birth. But Lechaira, Avram had already left the place of his birth. The place of his birth was Ur Kastim. He wasn't born in Haran, so why is Haran called moladetecha? Right, that's one question. Similarly, 2 weeks from now, you're going to have the same question. Because when Avraham sends his servant Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak, because Yitzchak cannot leave the holiness of Eretz Yisrael because he's a sacrifice, he's an Akedah, he was sanctified. So Avraham sends Eliezer to the area called Aram Naharayim, Syria between the two rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, and Haran is the main city of Aram Naharayim. And Avraham tells Eliezer, go El Artsi, my land, Umoladeti, which means the place of my birth. So again, this may be a technical question, but it's an interesting question. Was Avram born in Ur Kastim, as the end of Parshas Noach suggests? Or was Avram born in Haran, which is why it is called Moladetecha, and Avram refers to it as Moladeti. Right? It is an interpretive problem that the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban spend a great deal of time trying to figure out. Yeah. The southern end of the crescent.
And the
Haran is the top.
The whole crescent called? Did the whole crescent have a name?
Not in the Torah. I mean, it's called either Mesopotamia or the Fertile Crescent, but the Torah does not call the crescent by a name.
So each side has a name?
Well, there are cities. I mean, the sides are not given names, but the cities. Or Kastim is a city at the southern tip. Haran is a city at the northern top. But Haran is in an area that is given him called Aram Naharayim.
So where did Eliezer go?
Aram Naharayim.
So the whole thing is called Aram Naharayim?
No, only up there, between the two rivers.
So that's probably where he was born.
No, but he went to Haran, specifically.
Haran, you said, was Aram Naharayim.
Haran is the main city of Aram Naharayim. Yeah, I understand, but at the end of Parshas Noach, I understand that. That's what you would say, yeah. But the end of Parshas Noach, it says the following. It says, Avram, as he was called, Terach, and Lot, left Ur Kasdim to go to Canaan, and they came as far as Haran, and then Terach died.
So that would sound like they were born in
Ur Kasdim. That's the question. That's the contradiction. That's exactly right. That's exactly the contradiction. That's the contradiction. Was Avram born in Ur Kasdim, or was Avram born in Haran? You have a contradiction. The end of Parshas Noach suggests Ur Kasdim. Moladetecha and Moladeti suggests Haran, which is Aram Naharayim. So the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra have a big arichas. Some suggest that they started in Haran, they moved to Ur Kasdim, right, and then they left Ur Kasdim.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah. That's not what the Pesukim
say, unless
the
Midrash says,
why don't you
get stuff? The short answer is that there's an unrecorded detail in the Torah. But okay. That's one issue. Again, it's a technical issue, and I don't have a lot of Hashkafa that you derive from it, but as I'm saying, even a little question, like where was Avram born, there is a fundamental contradiction in the Chumash itself. Perhaps that's part of the enigma. In other words, Avram's choice is a mystery to me. We don't even know, kind of a mystery person in some ways. Another issue is, how old was Avram Avinu? Again, I can show you just simple textual diukim. How old was Avram Avinu when he came to Eretz Yisrael? Now, in Parshach Lech Lecha, the Torah explicitly tells us he came to Eretz Canaan when he was 75 years old, or at least he left Haran to go to Canaan when he was 75 years old. And yet, we have very, very strong proof that, in fact, Avram was in Eretz Yisrael no later than the 70, because in the covenant among the parts, the Bris Ben Absarim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, your children will be enslaved in a land that is not theirs for 400 years. Now, if you recall the famous Rashi, L'chaira, the Jews were not in Egypt 400 years. They were only in Egypt 210 years. But the answer is, Eino Chinami. Hashem didn't say you're going to be in Egypt 400 years. You'll be in a land that is not yours for 400 years. And that starts from the birth of Yitzchak, because even though Yitzchak was always in Eretz Yisrael, but he was harassed, he was persecuted, his wells were filled up. So Yitzchak had the feeling, even in Eretz Yisrael, that it was an Eretz Lo Lahem, and it was 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak that we left Mitzrayim. Okay, so we were in Mitzrayim 210 years, but from the birth of Yitzchak till Yetzias Mitzrayim is 400 years. Now, one more number. In Parshas Bo, when we actually left Mitzrayim, it says the amount of time that we spent was 430 years. This is the Beferish in the Chumash. So how do you get that? in Mitzrayim was only 210. From the birth of Yitzchak was only 400. Where do you get 430? So Rashi again explains, it was 430 years from the covenant of the parts. From the bris ben ha-psarim to Yitzias Mitzrayim was 430. Now, put that all together, that means the following. The bris ben ha-psarim was 30 years before the birth of Yitzchak. How old was Avram when Yitzchak was born? 100. 30 years before is 70. How old was Avram by the bris ben ha-psarim? 70. But the Torah says he didn't come to Eretz Yisrael till 75. Right? So how do you reconcile that? So the Ramban explains, based on a number of Midrashim, that this is Avram Avinu's second trip. Like Nefesh B'Nefesh, he had a pilot trip first. Which means, at the age of 70, and maybe we don't even know how many years before that, he had come to Eretz Yisrael on his own. There was a magnetic pull to the Kedushas HaOretz. And that is where we had the war of the four and the five kings, and the bris ben ha-psarim, and even though the Torah writes this after the reference to 75, this is an example of ein muktam u'meuchar b'Torah. The Torah does not follow chronological sequence. And then, for reasons that the Medrash does not make clear, he went back, and later Hashem gave him the tzivoy lech lecha. So again, just two interesting preliminary points. And that is, the Torah is ambiguous as to where Avram was born. And textually, although it's not explicit, but you can figure it out, Avram had a whole other experience in Eretz Yisrael, which was prior to the commandment of Hashem to go, which means to say, this is an amazing thing, that from a distance of thousands of miles, Haran is not next door, at least 1,000 miles, Avram Avinu, like a magnet, was drawn to the idea that this is where he could find God. Now, someone who explained this in a bit of a tragic way, it's almost a tragic way, that is, Avram Avinu had a hiskalos, had a revelation of the divine, at a very young age, some say at the age of 3, etc. But for many, many years afterwards, he didn't have that revelation. He believed in God, he was convinced of Hashem, and he taught people about Hashem. But the direct hiskalos of Hashem was lacking. Now, for us who have never had these types of revelations, we don't really understand, but one has to understand that the sweetness of the direct revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so overwhelming that nothing in Olam Hazeh could be compared to it. And Avram was yearning for that connection. And Avram Avinu understood that in Chutz La'aretz that wouldn't be possible. So he's coming to Eretz Canaan on his own, even before Hashem reveals himself, because he's seeking that connection with Hashem. And indeed he got it, because the bris ben ha-psarim was made in Eretz Yisrael proper before the Lech Lecha. Did you want to say? Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That didn't make his test so great then.
That's a good question. That is a very good question. If Avraham Avinu went to Eretz Yisrael on his own, and he wanted to go on his own, then when Hashem tells him to go, it's not such a great test. That's exactly what he wanted to do. He made the pilot trip. He registered with Nefesh B'Nefesh, it's a very interesting question. It is a good question.
But didn't it make it greater when Hashem commands him to do something?
That's very true, that it's a greater mitzvah when you're commanded. On the other hand, the argument is, it wasn't so much of a test, because it's what he wanted to do anyway. Okay, it's a good heart. Yeah. Yeah. It might be. There is one unknown here, and I'm going to try to see to find some answer to it, and that is, if Avram was actually in Eretz Yisrael, what made him go back to Haran, which required a second? And that might be the key to understanding this, which might have made the second time a big Nisayon. Yeah.
Sfarno over there talks about a And I said that Terah and Abraham were both on their way to Eretz Canaan.
Yep.
Because it was part of the inheritance of Shem.
Right.
And that there was a tremendous amount of war going on at that time.
Yep.
Canaan, because the Philistim were trying to take over. They were a naval nation.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming into Eretz Canaan and trying to take over. So we couldn't be that because of that kind of unrest.
The turbulence.
Going on.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, just because of that. Now, again, the Ramban says that although Avram and Terach both were going to Eretz Israel, their respective motives were different. Terach might have been an economic motive. Avram came for the Ruchnius motive. It's very interesting, just to give you an analogy, although it's a totally different situation, but it's a bit of an analogy. When the Ramban was like 14 or 15, and the Ramban was born in Spain, when it was occupied Islamic Spain, Moorish Spain, and they wandered from place to place, but when the Rambam was 14 or 15, his family actually came to Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam spent some of his adolescence in Eretz Yisrael, and in fact records later that he was zocha to be mispalel at the Kaisel Maravi, which was then just a tiny little thing above the ground, and he celebrated the rest of his life. The day that he first saw the Kaisel, he celebrated as a Yom Tov. But the Rambam's family was only able to stay in Eretz Yisrael for around 2 years because of tremendous Islamic persecutions. And that's why the Rambam's family moved to Egypt, where the Rambam spent the balance of his life. So there were situations, even in the Middle Ages, where people came to Eretz Yisrael and they just had to leave because of the turbulence that existed, although it wasn't the same issue. But yeah, the Rambam himself went through that turbulence and the like. So these are things to look at. Again, even basic questions in Chumash are sometimes perplexing once you try to look at the chronologies and the like. But now I want to raise yet another question, and that is, so we have Hashem choosing Abraham, and then we have the covenant of the parts in which Abraham is informed that there's going to be an exile and etc. Be'eretz lo lahem. And then finally, when Abraham is 99 years old, he is given the final cementing of the covenant through the mitzvah of Bris Mila. And that is the segue to Parshas Vayera, where on the third day after the circumcision, the angels come and they give him the news that he's going to have a child within the next year. So I want to raise two questions about the mitzvah of Bris Mila as they come out in this parsha. Again, the Meshech Chachma talks about both of these. The first question is a technical question, and that is, Chazal have a Masorah, as part of the oral law, Torah Shebal Peh, that the Avos kept the whole Torah even before it was given. That somehow Avram Avinu understood about Shabbos and about Kashrus. In fact, that's why they all talk about the meat and the milk next to, right? Chema v'chalav, right? And that's why they make the point that first there was the milchiks and then there was the fleshiks, because Avraham Avinu was zahir in basar v'chalav, etc. Many, many questions about that. How could Yaakov marry two sisters? I'll talk about that later. But suffice it to say that Chazal had a fairly definitive tradition that at least Avraham, actually some Ma'amari Chazal say all the Avos, but at least Avraham kept the whole Torah ad shelo nitna. Somehow with Ruach HaKodesh. Now again, this is a very high madrega. The same way most of us understand, you're not supposed to kill, you're not supposed to steal, we understand that intuitively. His perception into the spiritual DNA of the universe was that you can't mix wool and linen. Like he understood, the same way I understand you don't kill, he understood shatness, all these things. So, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, not connected to the political, late political party, I don't know if there is a, whatever it is, a Mifdal anymore, right, Mifdal is long gone, but be it as it may, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi was in the 1500s, a Turkish gadol, and he was the greatest mafaresh of Rashi. Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi asks the Kasha, if Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah before it was given, why didn't he give himself a bris milah before Hashem commanded him? He should have given himself a bris milah as soon as he entered Eretz Canaan. Because he kept the whole Torah shelo nitna, why does he wait until the tzivoy? So Rabbi Yoel Mizrahi himself gives a well-known answer, and this is what you quoted, that since when a person does a mitzvah they're commanded to do, that is greater than a mitzvah they're not commanded, and Avram knew he was going to be commanded, bris milah, you only get one chance. If he would have done it without a command, he would never have the ability to do it. Every other mitzvah he could do today, and when he's commanded tomorrow, he'll do it as a mitzvah. But bris milah, if he does it as an eidah mitzvah, he won't be able to do it as a mitzvah. So he waited. By the way, just as a little aside, people ask the question, why is it greater to do a mitzvah that you're commanded to do? I think if I do a mitzvah I don't have to do, but I do it anyway, that's extra credit. If I clean up my room because, you know, my mother or my wife tells me to do so, I don't deserve as much credit as if I do it on my own. So you know what Tosfos says? Tosfos says an amazing thing, which is 100% true. He says, you know, once you're commanded, the Yetzirah creates a stubbornness. Meaning, well, you know, again, your husband is about to take out the garbage. He wants to do something nice for his wife. And his wife says, take out the garbage. At that point, there's a certain resistance. I don't like to be told what to do. But that's the way it is. That's why in the Reform movement, there's a tremendous movement to put on tefillin, but only among women. There is no hislavus among men to put on tefillin in the Reform movement. Because when you're not mitzvah, you want to do it. When you're mitzvah, yetzer hara. Alright. So that's Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi's answer, right? But the Brisker Rav gives another answer. The Brisker Rav says, well, what is the mitzvah of Bris Milah? The mitzvah of Bris Milah is to remove that which Hashem said needs to be removed. The Brisker Rav says, until Hashem says to remove it, cutting off the foreskin is like cutting off your finger. Meaning to say, there's nothing you're removing because Hashem, right, didn't say to remove it. But the Marsha in Maseches Yevamos gives another answer. The Marsha says the following. The question doesn't begin, because the concept that Avram Avinu kept the whole Torah before it was given is a consequence of the spiritual greatness that Bris Milah gave him. As a result of the Bris, he now understood. Until he had the Bris, he didn't understand. So I want to be masber just very much bekitzer. In what way does the Bris Milah give him the capacity to see mitzvos in a way that he couldn't have seen it before? Question one. Question two. All of us know, of course, that Avram and Sarai's name were changed. The way the Medrash explains it, actually it all comes from Sarai. The Yud of Sarai was nischalek, it was divided into two hays. One hay was added to Avram to make it Avraham, and the other hay was left with Sarai to leave her as Sarah. Shinoi Hashem. But the Shinoi Hashem is absolutely a consequence of Bris Milah. It is only after the commandment of circumcision that Avram and Sarah's name is changed. What is the connection, right? So two questions I want to address very, very quickly. One is, why does Avram understand the whole Torah, Atchelo Nitna, only after Bris Milah? And two, what is the Shaychus, what is the connection of Shinoi Hashem to Bris Milah, the Shinoi Hashem? And here, and again, some of you may have heard that I said some of this last Monday, so I apologize those of you that were at the Shari Chesed Shir. And that is, we know, everyone's heard this in a Sheva Brachos, a famous Gemara, about Ish V'Isha, man and woman. They have Hashem's name in their words, Ish, Yud, and Isha, Hey. So when Hashem is in their relationship, everything is wonderful. You take the Yud and the Hey out, you have what is called Eish, a fiery destruction of egotism and selfishness. Without Hashem, two married, you know, a married couple are like a fire. Each one is destroying each other and themselves with anger and selfishness and egotism. All of that is beautiful. All of that is MS, of course. But the question becomes, the Maral takes it a little further. Why does the man get the Yud and the woman get the Hay? Of those two letters of Hashem's name, why is the man Yud and the woman Hey? And the Maral says, Yud, based on another Gemara, Yud represents the spiritual power which created Olam Haba. Olam Haba was created via the letter Yud. Olam Hazeh was created via the letter Hey. And this is a Gemara in Menachos. Maral explains, Yud is the least physical of the Aleph Beis because it's the smallest letter. It represents 100% Ruchnius. Olam Haba is the world of the spirit. There is no Achila, there is no Shasiyah, there is no Guf. Yud is Olam Haba. Hey, the Maral says, is a composite of two letters. Visualize a Hey. It's a Dalet, and the left leg of the Hey is a Yud. I would have thought about, but the Yevet, even a small regel is good, so it could be a Yud. Now, Dalet represents pure physicality, because physical matter exists in four dimensions: length, width, height, and time. Einstein didn't discover that. Time is an aspect of matter. Matter exists within a framework of time-space. In fact, even the Maral didn't invent that either. This goes back, even among non-Jewish, goes back to Aristotle, Plato, and the like. So Dalet represents pure materialism. Yud represents spirituality. The letter He is the ability to spiritualize the physical. The Maral says, men, again, these are generalizations. I'm aware of the danger of generalizations. But men tend to be corrupted by the physical world. It brings out their testosterone, their competitiveness, their egotism. So just like a person with emphysema needs to be on pure oxygen, men need their yuds. They need their kolels. They need their yeshivos. They need to be disengaged from the world to some degree, because the world brings them down. A woman's koach, the Maral says, is that she can spiritualize even the physical. She can take the physical details of running a home, of raising a child, and she could be machnis kedusha into them. And in many ways, the Asher Kenegdo is to help the man understand that even the details of physical living can be elevated and consecrated and brought to a high level. Now, it's no accident that the gematria of Hey is one half of that, of Yud. Because sure, pure Kedusha is much more exciting. Pure Kedusha, when I'm separated from all the distractions, I can reach real high levels. When I have to be involved in the physical world, there are so many distractions, I can't focus. So yes, it's less intense. But it's ultimately the Ribbono Shel Olam's will, as the Baal HaTanya quotes over and over again, to have, from a Medrash, that Hashem wants a Dira B'Tachtayim, right? This is Kamada Chabad, almost an official Chabad expression, but it's taken from a Medrash that the Baal HaTanya uses a lot. It is Hashem's will to make a Dira, a dwelling place, B'Tachtonim, in the lower world. That's why the Torah was given to people and not to angels. People who struggle, people who have a Yetzer Hara, people who have distractions, people who cannot always focus at 100% intensity, but they try to bring that Kedusha. So that's why the man is the Yud and the woman is the Hay. So now, let's go back to Bris Milah. The Sefer Achinuch tells us that Bris Milah is done on the organ of a human being that you might associate as the most animalistic and the least susceptible to rational control. And what is the Torah teaching me by Bris Milah? That even the functions that we share with animals, we elevate and sanctify. So now we understand, if Bris Milah teaches us how we must be able to sanctify even the physical, our eating, our drinking, our sleeping, intercourse, elimination. Every function can be used in a way in which you serve Hashem and you understand how it serves Hashem. We now understand why the Shinoi Hashem is precisely the letter Hey in both names. Because hey is the ability to bring the yud into the dalet. And that's what Bris Mila taught. And this also answers why Avraham Avinu was able to understand the mitzvos ad shelo nitna. Because what are mitzvos? Mitzvos are our engagement with the physical world to sanctify it. So, for example, from the wool of the sheep we make tzitzis. And leather we make tefillin. And I shake a lulav and an esrog. Now, you might think, if we're supposed to be spiritual people, forget about that physical stuff. Let me just lock myself in a room and contemplate and meditate and think about God. I got to worry about pine needles. Well, I'm thinking about chutzlars already, but I'm thinking about, you know, schach falling into the soup. Again, my New England roots here. But now this is Elamai. What are mitzvos about? Taking the raw physical materials of Olam Hazeh and elevating them. So once again, Bris Mila, which sanctifies the physical, results in the hay, which is bringing the yud into the dalet, and it results in Avraham Avinu understanding about shatnez and lulav and esrog and matzah, because until that point, his Aveda was primarily cerebral, meditative, contemplative. Now he understood it can be translated into the physical realities of life. And once again, as the Maharal says, women are uniquely gifted in that particular koach, going beyond mitzvos masios to see the significance in every aspect of Aveda. So, B'ezras Hashem, I hope that all of us can be zochet to learn from this, and we have a good week.